Hello and welcome to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Circle Podiatry.
And my name is Jonathan Brocklehurst. It's our aim to raise your awareness of just how important your feet are, to give you the solutions to your foot and leg problems, and to teach you how to prevent future issues.
So grab a cuppa, relax, sit back and put your feet up, and enjoy learning about the one part of your body that often gets forgotten. That's right, it's your feet.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we will be exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, the decisions we make, and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. And that is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you're interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations. That was a lovely piece of music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And now we're about to go into our interview with our very special guest today. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. And to be in touch with us, please do go and visit the UK Health Radio website, where you can find all content here from the Foot Health Show. So without any further ado, here's our interview with our very special guest. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Hayley, who is Director of Wound Rescue and Board Chair of Wounds Australia. Thank you very much, Hayley, for joining me today, all the way from sunny Australia. And that is a big thing for us on the Foot Health Show today, because it's 8 o'clock in the morning. And it's actually, I think it's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon in Australia. So hi, Hayley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jonathan. My pleasure to be here. And I will correct one thing. It's actually freezing cold and winter, but not so sunny.
Oh, that's interesting, because here we're getting what we would consider an Australian summer, which is going past 35 degrees. So this is all topsy-turvy in terms of the weather systems at the moment. Brand new and unique. But yes, in terms of your background, I know you've had extensive experience in nursing. I think it's about 15 years plus. And it's really brought you into the sphere of and passion for chronic wound care. But just tell me a little bit about your background and your interests and why it was, you know, that really brought you to that passion.
Yeah, look, thank you for the opportunity to share where I've come from, which is actually 22 years of nursing. So it makes me in the older category. But look, I started off in the acute sector in ICU and ED predominantly. I actually had a personal experience. My grandmother was said to have a bilateral amputation due to some very severe venous ulcers. And so I wasn't happy with that. So I started becoming her full-time carer and supporting her with her wound management and working as a multidisciplinary team with the surgeons and the community nurses. We were actually able to heal the wounds and avoid the amputation. This then led me to the path of, there's obviously an issue here where we could actually be saving more limbs, more lives, and helping quality of life. So about 15 years ago, I decided to get out of the acute sector, still do a little bit of work in ED every now and then, but I focused more heavily as a wound clinical nurse consultant. I did develop my own company, Wound Rescue, and we service Australia and New Zealand for anything with wounds. So whether that's education and training or supporting people with referral pathways. And with the pandemic, of course, telehealth certainly come a long way. So yeah, that's how I kind of got into the business.
Wow. And of course, the pandemic would have accelerated so much more with the with telehealth. And absolutely, like you say, the communication with patients has really transformed in many, many ways, I suppose, and brought clinicians to a more agile way of working. And particularly, I suppose, with wound care, that's had to be the case, and very, very fast, I imagine, just with some patients being so remote. And in Australia, I guess, as well, with different areas and different regions, some more diffuse than others, how has that been for clinicians in Australia? Because obviously slightly different to the UK, but the burden of chronic wounds, I suppose, is just as prevalent. How have you found that the approach to wound care during the pandemic?
Yeah, it's been difficult globally. Let's start there. I've never seen a workforce in health work so hard that I have done in the last 2.5 years. So my hat goes off to every healthcare worker listening today. Look, it's been exceptionally difficult in terms of how you manage a wound, because whether people like it or not, you do want to see the wound. You do want to touch the wound. And I hate to say it, but you do want to see if there's any particular odors that will lead you into a different pathway with how you manage it. What we found was a lot of our patients, and we have a lot of rural patients in Australia, so some out in the Northern Territory where they can't actually get any services, and we were actually forced to do more telehealth because they didn't want to come into our clinics. So they didn't want to leave their homes, they didn't want to have anybody come into their homes for fear of getting COVID, and so we were really forced to elevate how many referrals we were doing via telehealth. And it has some challenges. We've had some good outcomes and no real bad ones, knock on wood, but it's certainly been challenging for me and my team.
Wow. And I know that
the full scale of the burden, I believe in Australia is about $3 billion US dollars. And in the UK, it's around about the $5 billion pound mark. Mm-hmm. And so a huge burden. But at the same time, it just creates that onus, doesn't it, on being able to address such an important area of health. I mean, I think it's about 1% of the NHS budget is pretty much dedicated to diabetic foot ulcers alone. I mean, it's just remarkable, really, where it's got to. But where do you feel that wound care is going into the future?
Look, I think we are starting to get some reform with our parliament. It's taking some time, and we're certainly going to be pushing for more of a call to action to support the notion of getting wounds on the map. In fact, you know, you mentioned that I was the board chair for Wounds Australia, and one of our advocacy works that we do is what we call Wound Awareness Week. And in fact, that kicks off next Monday. That's when we really start to meet with our federal parliament people, and we start to really get them to change what we're doing. And we're asking for a number of things. We're asking for funding to support education and training. We're asking for support to look at tertiary education. You know, if you think about universities in Australia, they're lucky to actually provide, and I'm talking about doctor degrees and nursing degrees, they're lucky to provide 1 hour of dedicated wound training in the entire degree. So we are sending people out of these courses without any real knowledge. So we have a knowledge gap. So there's lots of things that need to happen.
Wow. And I can imagine, especially if you've got you know, healthcare professionals going into the areas, particularly remote areas. I can think of areas like the outback, for example. You know, how does that work? Because in the UK, everything seems fairly metropolitan, really, in terms of the cities, the towns, the connectivity, even into the rural areas. How does that work in terms of the outback specifically, for example?
It's a lot more difficult. There's more complexities for a number of reasons. One, you have a huge environment that has a big geographic area. So you can't just drive 20 minutes down the road and see one patient and 20 minutes later to another. You are driving hours. I have one patient that I go to once a month and he's a 9-hour drive away. Wow. So there is huge problems and gaps, and telehealth is only one component of that. So there's no real services. In fact, what happens in our in Australia, in terms of those living in a rural area, if they can't get anybody out there, there is no other choice but to send them into the acute sector, into the hospital. So then we have this cycle of, you know, backing up our already overworked hospital system.
Wow. And I'm sure, you know, in terms of everything else, in terms of the system in the UK, of course, we've got the NHS at the point of need and point of use. But in terms of Australia, what's the healthcare system like out there? Is it almost like a US-style insurance-based healthcare, or is there a quicker access to healthcare at the point of need?
I don't think I would compare us to America, but we have Medicare. So we also have the medical benefits scheme, which unfortunately, this is another part of the reform we are trying to work with Parliament about, is adding what we call MBS items. So numbers that doctors can claim purposeful for wound management. And currently they're not on there. So we have some issues in terms of how GPs, general practitioners, can actually support somebody who comes into a doctor for a day, has a wound, the nurse has to deal with managing that wound, but there's actually nowhere to claim for it. And what does that mean in practice? What that means is that often they're getting subordinate dressing products put onto the wounds because they can't afford other products. What then happens is the wound breaks down or fails to heal because they are basic dressings, and we get this vicious cycle. They keep bouncing back to the doctor, or they end up again in that acute sector within the hospital. So I would say that whilst we have a relatively good scheme in Australia, and we're quite lucky when it comes to healthcare, boy, there's some work to be done in terms of wound management.
Yes, I mean, that's really interesting as well, because in the UK, from my own experience working as a diabetes specialist podiatrist and part of a multidisciplinary foot team in an acute setting, as well as working in a community setting, How does it work in terms of in Australia when you get to the acute setting, the patients in, they, for example, may have a diabetic foot ulcer, there may be a presence of biofilm, and obviously urgent care needs to prevent the further spread of infection to osteomyelitis. How is it at that point that the healthcare system works together? Is there that multidisciplinary team, or is that fairly new and recent in Australia?
Look, I would say that the multidisciplinary team in Australia is quite well put together in terms of the acute sector within that hospital setting. So all of our hospitals will have a wound clinical nurse consultant, for example. So they can pull on those experts and work together to support them. It's when they're discharged. So when they're discharged home, then they're left with going back to their general practitioner to support them with their ongoing treatment or in-house community services. We have some issues around what we call home and community care. So if you're at that certain age, if you've been deemed successful to be provided with funding for a package for care, it can take many years to get on that scheme. So if you're a person who's got this wound, you can't wait 2-3 years to get on that package. So we've got some areas that are good and some that need a lot of work.
That's really insightful. And I think just coming back to Wounds Rescue is really, I noticed on the website, and this was quite poignant actually, about how there's also, as well as the treatment of wounds, there's also the treatment of the life of the person. And there's that sense of the holistic approach. And what's your view on the holistic approach and how important do you think that is to wound care?
It is extraordinarily important. The first thing that myself and my team always train on is look at the whole person and not just the hole in the person. And what I mean by that is if you don't factor in the person's nutrition, their mobility, how they get around socially and all those other aspects holistically, you will fail to heal that wound because it's all compounding. So it's exceptionally important.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And I think within the course of the time that a patient will both have diabetic foot ulcer and that journey throughout their time of healing, there's always that sense from the patient that in the treatment they will mention different aspects of their life, and it'll be quite apparent that it's not just the wound that's being treated. And often when you've got, say, 25 minutes in a treatment and you're, as a clinician, doing everything you can to address, you know, of course, the wound itself, and wound management is so, so important. But as well, you're trying to address the elements of the patient's life, the psychosocial elements. And often patients will want to divulge information about, you know, whether they're feeling safe in their environment, and those areas of life as well, like you say, are so, so important. So in Australia, I think it's giving our listeners today a real sense of, I suppose, like you said at the beginning, the global effort that is being put together to really, really deal with this, because in of itself, it's becoming a huge scale issue. And I was also wondering about that, the contribution to that scale. I know that diabetes has become more widely known about within the media sphere, but in terms of foot health, in Australia, how much do people know, would you say, about the effect of diabetes on their feet and how to get help?
Yeah, look, I would say if I was asked this question 20 years ago, I would say we'd have a real problem on our hands with more amputations than expected. What I would say now is we are certainly getting better. The clients and patients that I see certainly have more knowledge than what I recall 20 years ago. But again, we do have some places to go with this. We are a country that is increasing with how many people are actually getting diabetes. That puts us into alert because that puts them at a higher prevalence for wounds, which then puts you at a higher prevalence for amputations. So one of the things we always focus on is good foot care. You know, check your feet. One of the things I always say to my patients, wear white socks. If you're going to wear socks, wear white ones. Why? Because if you take them off at night and you see clearly that there is a red mark on it, you know you have to look at your feet, because we know there's issues with neuropathy and they may not be able to feel it. Some of the other little things that we get them to do is actually put a mirror on the floor, hold your feet over it, and inspect those feet. It is crucial that you protect your feet. And if you can, get somebody else to have a look, such as a podiatrist.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. And I think the onus is really when foot health for podiatrists to see the need for patients to really take that responsibility over their own self-care. And I think it's self-care that's now becoming, I've noticed, especially in clinic, even more widely talked about. And I suppose that it does contribute to why you were saying patients are recognizing the signs and symptoms of infection as well, and just really understanding the effect of diabetes, their glycemic control. It's become very, very interesting actually. And I'm fairly recent to the profession, I must admit, and I haven't seen as much longevity across a time span as you have, which is really interesting to see how it's really evolved in that time over the last 20 years or so. So that's just fascinating to me. And I was also wondering if you're giving a message to, I suppose, people like me who are fairly recent graduates in the podiatry world or even in the allied health professions, what kind of advice can you give to us as we're starting our careers in effect and really getting to grips with these challenges such as chronic wounds?
So a couple of messages. One is, train the people that you're interacting with well. So I'm talking about your patients. And what I would be suggesting is those little tips that I've just given, for example, about inspecting feet, which I'm sure you're all doing. But another crucial element is early referral. What we find a lot of the times is that the patient will continue to try and treat and fix that wound, and they don't seek out that assistance early enough. So my message would be early treatment, early referral, because that will actually help the person moving forward. And I think for you guys as well is around, now I don't know if it's a bit different in UK, but in Australia, debridement is crucial. So if we want to actually get wounds to heal, we need a good, you mentioned bioburdens, and we know that chronic wounds in particular, we know will have a bioburden. So good debridement is also very crucial in terms of good wound healing.
Absolutely. And the skill and the dexterity of being able to do that as a podiatrist, I think, is absolutely is absolutely vital. And the way we train practitioners, I think, is really, really crucial as well. And certainly, for example, in the community sector area of the NHS in the UK, where I've worked, it's just even more imperative that patients can feel that within their treatments, they're getting the best quality care at the point of need, but also they're getting the best advice that they can take away from them for that round 7-day period between that, for example, that Monday and the following Monday, and that they can reliably know and seek those sources of information as well, should they want to, between times. And of course, leaflets are also a key part of that, as well as online journals and research. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the world of research as well, because I suppose being at such a key level, when you're talking about government level as well, and talking to government authorities effectively, and representing such a, you know, an important part of people's lives to governments, how do you present that knowledge to them in a way that really accelerate, like you were saying, the process, the speed of response to this?
Yeah, great question. Look, research is the backbone for everything. If you have good evidence, you can then have a voice to what you want to achieve. And if we're talking to our government officials, I'll be honest, money talks and quality of life talks. So if you can show both how, firstly, they will save money and save funding for the benefit of the person's quality of life, then you will have a good conversation with your government officials. So, you know, we work with people like the AMA, which is the Australian Medical Association, to try and get working with the doctors together with Wounds Australia to get these things on the map. And it's successful. You know, you mentioned about, you know, that the patient also being able to look after themselves. We've just published a paper, myself and some colleagues, on the shared care experience. And one of the things we found is that, you know, if we can actually adopt the shared care experience, we can save clinicians 3.5 billion hours of time by 2030. And that's in our paper. So that's the kind of stuff you want to see coming through the research, because it really backs up why we do it.
That's huge. I mean, that just that figure alone, I mean, it does make you go, wow. And I'm sure for many of our listeners today would say the same. It's an incredible figure. And I think if more of that is really shone across the globe, I think particularly spoken recently to a clinician out in Qatar and such, in countries where I think that same effectively the essence of the importance of chronic wound care is really highlighted, I think that can make such a difference. And like you say, you know, money does talk and figures do talk, and the research combined really does accentuate that. Wow. That really is insightful. And now going forward, I think when we're now combining, I suppose, the telehealth that we've talked about at the beginning, we've talked about the importance of research, we've talked about the importance of being able to relay that to government, and being able to put all of that together for the benefit of the patient. How do you feel that all of these factors together can then play a collectively important role in the future of patient care?
Yeah, look, you kind of hit the nail on the head before, Jonathan, when you asked about the multidisciplinary team. And if we don't work together and if we don't communicate, and that means, you know, crossing countries as well and communicating, sharing, working together collaboratively to come up with guidelines, work together on research and share ideas, we will be a stronger force. And, you know, I was so delighted to hear from you, Jonathan, to say, come on this channel today and have a chat with you, because it tells me that there are people interested in hearing about this. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part. If we talk about it, if we talk about this silent, horrible epidemic, which is what we call it in Australia, then people will start opening up discussions about why it's so important that we actually start to heal these wounds and, more importantly, prevent them from happening in the first place.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I agree with you. It is a silent epidemic. And particularly now in the UK, we've had recent news about a cost of living crisis and all of this happening at, you know, a time just post-COVID as well. For patients and a fair number of them who, even in the UK, are for a number, an array of reasons, just are unable to address newly formed wounds, particularly neuropathic wounds on the plantar aspect of the foot. What's some advice from your experience in Australia of being able to get the message out to people who, for example, A, may have not actually had a wound before and actually had advice about a wound before, or may not have had a family member or friend who's had a wound before? What would you say is an innovative way, in effect, to try and get to those areas where people are just either not able or just haven't heard the best way to get that best care?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think it's by case by case, I would have to say, but we've done lots of things from, you know, using technology where we'll have a camera in somebody's home and we're actually talking the carer through how to manage that treatment, or even the patient themselves. There's certain devices out there. So if I think about things like venous ulcers, where you need special garments that you need to wear to ensure that venous return, there's things like that. They're called the Easy As, which is basically an applicator to put it on easier. We've even used things like there's little grabby machines. They're a long stick and it's got a little handle at the end that grabs things to help dress the wound. There are so many things out there. I would say to every clinician listening, it's about being inventive sometimes and just thinking outside the box, because there's no real easy fix for this and we just have to be creative.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really nice way to conclude our interview today. I think those key messages of, yes, be innovative, and absolutely, you know, finding those ways to get the message out there about the importance of chronic wounds and how to manage them and treat them. Thank you so much, Hayley Ryan, for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for also enlightening myself and all of our listeners here at the Foot Health Show about just how important looking after our feet are, especially when it comes to chronic wounds.
Well, thank you so much, Jonathan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Hot sand on toes, cold sand in sleeping bags. I come to know that memories were the best things you ever had. The summer shore, beat down on bony backs, so far from home where the ocean stood, down dust and pine cone tracks. We slept like dogs down by the fireside, awoke to the fog where all around us the boom of summer died. Steady as the stars in the woods, so happy hearted in the warmth, rang true inside these bones as the old pine fell we sang. Just to bless the morning.
That was a fascinating interview. I learned so much from that, and I hope you did too. We're going to go straight into a commercial and then another piece of music, and we just hope that you've really enjoyed the show and the format. Anything that you want us to look at, any key topics, just let us know. But here's the next commercial.
As the stars in the woods, so happy hearted in the warmth, rang true inside these bones.
That was a fascinating interview. I learned so much from that, and I hope you did too. We're going to go straight into a commercial and then another piece of music, and we just hope that you've really enjoyed the show and the format. Anything that you want us to look at, any key topics, just let us know. But here's the next commercial.
Just to bless the morning. And we grow, grow, steady as the morning. Here we grow, grow, old as steel. I we grow, grow, happy as a new dawn. We grow, grow, old as steel. I we grow.
That was a fantastic piece of music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And now we're going to look at the four key ingredients to good footwear. Each week, I'm going to be saying this because I feel that it's important that whether we're a patient or a clinician or just genuinely very interested in looking after our feet, I think it's important to look at these four key ingredients. Number one, a deep and wide toe box. This is important because our first toe joint tends to take most of the load in the initial stage of what's known as the gait cycle, which is when we walk and we move. And in that process, the toes also play a key part in disseminating the forces that are acting on the feet. And the distribution of that force is aided by a deep and wide toe box. It means there's less chance of the joints being squeezed both at the sides of both the first and the fifth toe, but also it enables us to be able to flex the toe, our toes upwards and downwards in a motion that enables us to have better control and balance of our movement. The second key ingredient is a secure midfoot fastening, such as Velcro or laces. I mean, this is really important because without this, we are unable to control the forces across the foot and to stabilize the full extent of our movement. For example, a slip-on shoe may cover the entirety of the foot. It may protect the foot to some degree from stepping on something sharp or from coming across objects that may hit the sides of the foot. However, the movement or biomechanics of the foot, as we call it, may be impacted through shearing forces. So each forward motion can be impacted by the toes hitting the ends of the shoe because there isn't something to keep the middle of the foot in place. And that is why a secure midfoot fastening such as Velcro or laces is beneficial for us in our everyday lives, such as trainers, but also important in our indoor footwear, such as having a Velcro secure fastening for our slippers, if we choose to use slippers. Certainly important that we wear shoes indoors to protect our feet, because there can be objects that can be sharp, such as unnoticed sharp objects as pins, bits of shades of wood if they've come off objects, of furniture, etc. But really important we're monitoring our home and our surroundings as much as possible to avoid any accidents from occurring. Thirdly, it's really important to have a secure, stable and protective heel counter. This is the part of the footwear that essentially wraps around the ankle and the back of the foot, or what's known as the hind foot. This is really important also as it keeps the foot stable and secure within the confines of the shoe. This means that when we commence what's known as the heel strike during the gait cycle, it means that we can move off without any slippage, without any changes to the biomechanics or the forces acting on the foot to a large extent. So something like flip-flops, for example, without that stable heel counter, it puts more pressure on the toes to be able to grip onto the flip-flop to keep us moving forward, which can in the long term result in toe deformities occurring, such as hammer toe or clawed toes. It's also really important, the fourth ingredient to round this off, is a cushioned insole. Plenty of footwear may look aesthetically pleasing and very, very nice to possibly to look at and to wear or to notice to some degree, but without a cushioning insole, especially if we're walking lengths that require us to have that comfort, but also for there to be good shock absorption, we need to have a cushioned insole. So, for example, EVA as a material is something that supports the bottom of the foot, the sole of the foot, but also a material such as Poron can do similar. And these are two examples of some of the kinds of materials that are used nowadays. So if you're looking for insoles that would help your feet, these are two of many. And also I would encourage you to speak to your podiatrist or a professional in the line of podiatric medicine who can help you with understanding footwear. An orthotist is also a professional in footwear, in being able to make bespoke footwear too. So if you know an orthotist, they would be in a great position to be able to help you understand the right kind of footwear to be using. So thank you for listening. That's the four key ingredients of footwear. I hope you've enjoyed it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you're interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations. Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we have been exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, and the decisions that we make and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. That is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world. I look forward to you listening in and tuning in again next time.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep those legs and feet moving, and don't forget to tune in again with your friends next week.